Welcome to the Context Machine, episode 668. I'm Brian Chaffin.
And I'm Jeff Gamet. And I just realized if you flip 668 over, it's 899. So it still reads completely correctly, even though it's not the same number. And that's This Week in Numerology. Brian, where can people find you? No, wait. Oh, holy crap. Did I even tell people who I am? I'm Jeff Gamet. Check us out on our online home. That would be contextmachine.io.
You're Jeff. Are you top man number one or number two?
Doesn't that change based on season?
Yes, it probably does. You can also use contextmachine.io to reach out to us, or you can find us on Mastodon at contextmachine. Yep.
And Brian?
Yep.
Exciting news.
Yep.
Our sponsor today is LinkedIn Jobs.
That is exciting. Thank you for telling us. And we will tell you more about them later in the show.
Awesome.
So listen, we actually have to get to it. So that means a little bit less nonsense, a little bit less nonsense.
It's too late for that. Did you listen to our intro?
No, I'll have to do that later. But you started going on and on about some kind of HomeKit problem, and I just said, yeah, whatever. Just tell me about it on the show. So tell us about it.
Yeah, just so everyone knows, this is the easy way to come up with content. We listen to each other rant and then stop each other and be like, just let's record it. All right, so here's the problem.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, this show was not recorded chronologically in the way you're hearing it. We recorded this part of the conversation earlier, and then we just sort of spliced it in with the, you know, in the flow.
Right, because we actually do edit things.
Shh. Quiet.
Yeah. Okay. So to get everyone up to speed on what they missed before the show, oh, I'm ruining the illusion. I've been lamenting the fact that HomeKit has been broken for me in a weird way for well over a year, and the problem is I cannot add devices to HomeKit.
That is weird. What do you mean you can't add?
Okay, so here's the process. You get a new device that's HomeKit compatible. Mm-hmm. It has a little barcode or number that you scan so that it authenticates and becomes part of your HomeKit setup, right?
Mm-hmm.
And some devices have the thing where you hold your iPhone close to the device and it will do the pairing that way. But the point is you pair a device to your HomeKit network. And then once that pairing is done, it's now part of your network. So what happens for me is I start the pairing process. The Home app recognizes the device, knows what it is. And then when I tap the button to complete the process of adding it to my HomeKit system, it then fails and tells me that it can't add
the device. I see. Okay, that makes sense. But can you hear Ichabod chewing?
I cannot.
Okay, good.
Ichabod is such a polite chewer.
No, he is not a polite chewer. He set up camp right behind me, got his loudest Nylabone, and proceeded to start chewing away on it. So I'm glad you can't hear it.
Yeah, but I bet it sounds really great to you. Yeah.
Okay. So you go to add it, and it never finishes the pairing process.
Yeah. It fails, and it tells me it can't add the device.
Have you considered resetting your like everything?
Okay. So here's the thing, and that's ultimately where we will get with all of this. If I reset HomeKit, then that means I have to re-add every single device And if I want to keep any of like the shortcuts and stuff that I've already set up working, and I have a bunch of stuff that happens, I have to name everything exactly what it was before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that means that I need to know the correct name for HomeKit for everything. Mm-hmm. And I need to make sure that everything gets set back into the same rooms and all of that. And then I'll have to set up my HomeKit scenes again, all of the in HomeKit automations. And then hopefully I'm not breaking anything that I have running in shortcuts.
Right.
So anyhow, it's a nuke it from orbit and hope that it kills the alien egg infestation on the base on the planet.
Okay.
But here's the thing. Do I know it's going to really work? Or am I just stuck with all my HomeKit devices and I can't add anything to HomeKit?
Have you also considered resetting whatever you're using for a hub?
Yes. So I can almost guarantee anything.
Tell us what you're using for a hub.
I'm using an Apple TV, but I also have two HomePod minis and an OG HomePod that are hubs.
Okay.
So I have multiples and I've done the stuff like, okay, so here's a tip for people that are adding new devices that are coming up with a problem where it just doesn't add, but it ought to, and you haven't hit the problems that I'm having. A lot of these devices that end up on Wi-Fi, they use 2.4 gigahertz, and they're not smart enough to be able to grab your 2.4 gigahertz Wi-Fi.
Unless you turn off your 5 gigahertz Wi-Fi.
Unless you turn off your 5 gigahertz. So make sure that you temporarily disable 5 gigahertz so that you can get the devices to pair. Once they're paired, you can let 5 gigahertz turn back on, and you're fine. So, yes, I've done the turn off the 5 gigahertz thing. I've tried turning off all the other devices, like including my Mac, my iPads, my Apple Watch, anything else that could potentially control HomeKit and leave just my iPhone on. And I've even gone around and physically powered off every other HomeKit device that I have. It's like all of my accessories. And I've gone down the line. Multiple iOS versions, tried from an iPad, tried from multiple iPads, tried from my iPhone. And I double-checked to make sure that I'm not hitting the 100 device. I think it's 100 device. Or it might be 150 devices. Anyhow, no.
Okay.
But there's, I mean, you can have a couple thousand devices on your HomeKit network, no problem. The problem is your hub has a cap with, the hub has a cap on how many devices the hub can manage at any given time. So if you have multiple hubs, then that increases the number of devices. Anyhow, I'm not hitting even the one hub limit. All these different things that it could potentially be, I haven't been able to solve it. So I'm at the point now where it's either live with what I have and hope that I never have to replace a device, but never add anything else. Do a reset on HomeKit and start from scratch, or just give up on HomeKit at some point and use some other home automation system.
Slow down. So first of all, you said you have an old iPod you're using as that essentially serves a hub function.
No.
You did say that.
I said iPod?
Yes. I heard iPod. I guess it's possible you didn't say iPod, but
HomePod.
Ah.
I have an Apple TV, an OG HomePod, okay, and two HomePod minis.
I see. All right.
So those are all hubs.
So I would It doesn't sound like you did this, so correct me if I'm wrong, but I would do a factory reset on my hubs before I started nuking all of the devices that are on there. Because if I'm not mistaken, your HomeKit software, i.e. the app, will remember everything that's on there, even if you reset the hub.
That is correct, because it's not the hub that's keeping track of everything.
Right.
Yes.
So have you done that?
Yes.
Oh, shoot.
Yeah. Huh. But that is an excellent piece of advice. And I'm glad you brought it up, since I forgot to mention it.
The next thing I would consider doing is removing the last things I added to my network before resorting to nuking everything.
Okay. So if I take the last thing I added to the network, which I'm actually not sure what that is.
Yeah, I'm guessing you'd have to probably nuking five things would still be better than nuking everything.
Yes, but what's the likelihood I'll be able to re-add those things? So really the question is, what do I have on my network, on my HomeKit network, that I'd be willing to give up?
As a test.
Because I don't have any confidence that removing an item is going to make any difference. I'm not even sure nuking everything and starting over is going to make a difference.
I find it very impossible to believe that it's anything other than a specific conflict or other some kind of issue where you've got two devices that are fighting for the same space or something like that. Because
you're thinking along the lines kind of where I think the problem might be, and which does add some validity to the notion that nuking and starting from scratch could fix the problem. But I think that there's something corrupted somewhere in the HomeKit database.
It's either a specific conflict or there is a file that is corrupted. And okay, with that in mind, nuking everything should absolutely get you going again.
You would think, but is it worth it to do that?
Well, okay, I would say yes, because HomeKit is the only home automation concept that I trust. So that's my bias. My bias says, yes, it's worth it, because otherwise I got nothing. I know that for you, that's not the case. You're okay putting your crap out there for Amazon to be involved with.
But at least we know where I draw the line, because I'm not doing it with Google. But yeah. Okay. So Brian, I have been thinking more lately about trying the nuke and pave process where I just reset HomeKit completely, because if it doesn't work, then it tells me that I'm done with HomeKit anyhow. Okay. But if it does work, here comes the next problem. How do I make sure that I have the correct device names for everything when I set everything back up?
Well, okay, first, you could do that because you are meticulous, and all you have to do is just write down everything.
And here's part of the problem. Holy crap. Because, yeah, as far as I can tell, that is actually the answer. You just sit there and go through the home app and write down every single thing. I don't know of a way to actually export that information.
Oh, yeah. No.
So that you have a document, a spreadsheet, whatever.
I don't think Apple gives us that tool. And I don't know of any possible third-party solutions for that.
I haven't found one yet. And then it also has me chafed because I've had issues in the past where I've had to nuke and pave HomeKit for various reasons. And one of the things that just so annoyed me about that is that from the day HomeKit was given to us by Apple to today, so we're talking years of time, there has never been a way to back up your HomeKit database.
That's a good point.
And it's a fragile thing. It's a fragile thing with no backup.
Yeah, it is. By the way, speaking of HomeKit, Nuki announced a smart lock that looks pretty cool. John Keat pointed this out to us. And I just thought, you know, it supports Matter and Thread.
I should add that to my network. Oh, wait.
Yeah. So that's my last question. Is it that you can't add one item, or you've tried multiple new items and you can't add anything?
I can't add anything. I have tried multiple new items, different types of devices, different vendors. So it's not like, oh crap, I couldn't add a light bulb.
Have you contacted Apple?
I can't add another light bulb.
Have you contacted AppleCare about this?
Their solution was reset everything and try again.
Oh,
but their first suggestion, which is not acceptable, is log out of iCloud from everything and log back in, which breaks so many things. I am not going to break all this stuff across my Mac, my iPads, and my iPhone just to see if that will help. I've done that too many times. And I still am coming up against places where it became a problem. Now, if you let Apple have control over everything and just take all of their default settings for iCloud, so like all of your stuff is being stored by Apple and it's just total Apple control over everything, then it's not as much of a problem, but you still will have places where it screws stuff up for you.
Right.
So, but anyhow, Apple's suggestion was to do a reset on HomeKit and just start over.
I see. Right. Well, good luck.
How about if I wrap that up by saying, hey, listeners, do you know of a tool that will give me a list of everything that I have in HomeKit so that I don't have to write it all down manually? And then that would make it the sting a little bit less for me to do a reset and start over with all this stuff.
Yeah, that would make it a lot easier for sure.
Yeah. So
please let us know. You can write to us at contextmachinepodcast@gmail.com. You can hit Jeff up at
jgamut at on Mastodon. Mm-hmm. That would be the easiest place to find me.
You know, Blue Sky's been blowing up. Threads has gotten the bulk of the previous waves of Exeter. I'm going to pronounce it that way rather than the other way I like pronouncing Xitter. But this time around, the exodus from Exeter has, I think Blue Sky's been getting much more of that exodus. For what that's
I worth. Agree. And in one of our upcoming shows, we should talk some about that because
we talked about it recently.
I have some Yeah, but I have new thoughts where you'll want to be sitting down.
Okay. So, well, that sounds like a show for next week.
Okay.
We already have a topic. Oh, my God.
Holy crap. We haven't even finished this week's show, and we're already prepped for next week's show.
That's true.
I say we should just drop the mic now while we're ahead.
Well, you
know, and call it a show.
We have a sponsor to talk about, and I've got another thing that I wanted to do a quick hit and run on.
Okay.
So let's talk about LinkedIn jobs, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So LinkedIn isn't just a job board. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else. Even those who aren't actively searching for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. On LinkedIn, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. You can hire professionals like a professional on LinkedIn, and LinkedIn also knows that small businesses are wearing so many hats and might not have the time or resources to hire. LinkedIn is constantly finding ways to make the process easier. They even just launched a feature that helps you write your job descriptions, making the process even easier and quicker, which is probably why 2.5 million small businesses use LinkedIn for hiring. It's pretty impressive. The thing that I like the most, if you've been a long-time listener, you've heard me mention it because it's a great feature. It's their dashboard. LinkedIn's dashboard lets you have your job postings, your candidates, your questions. It puts everything at your fingertips. And it makes that process of putting together the information for your job postings and managing that process, it just makes it easier. So you can post your job for free at linkedin.com/ACM. That's linkedin.com/ACM to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply. We appreciate them sponsoring us.
Yeah. Thank you, LinkedIn Jobs. You wanted to do a hit and run?
Yeah. You had mentioned Mr. Mark Gurman of Bloomberg.
Mm-hmm.
He says that a new Apple Vision Pro is coming out.
Yes, and it's not going to be the like lower end model that people have been speculating on, but a full on rev for the current Apple Vision Pro, and should hit the market sometime in fall 2025 or into spring 2026. And get this. M5 processor. So the M series processor that hasn't even been announced yet, right?
Right. Because we're on the M4. I'm sorry. Yeah. I have a cough, and so my voice is going.
No, I get it. Hearing something like this for you as a Vision Pro user, I mean, it's going to get you choked up with excitement.
Well, I mean, to be honest, the speed of the processor is not why I don't use my Apple Vision Pro. I don't use my Apple Vision Pro because I've got two studio displays and I don't go anywhere. I've got two studio displays right here, right in front of me. I've got a 40-inch TV to the left. So I mean, it's, you know, it's this world of privilege that I live in that is why I don't use the Apple Vision Pros that I'm privileged to own. It's not the speed of the processor, but I think it would certainly be an M5 AVP would be impressive, I think.
I agree. Yeah. This stands in contrast to what our favorite industry analyst Ming-Chi Kuo was
Ming-Chi saying. Ming-Chi Wrong Again Kuo?
He was saying that Apple's plan for the next Vision model was going to be the lower end version, and but guess what? Coinciding with Mark Gurman saying that that it's going to be a rev of what's currently available that comes out next. He's Ming Chi Kuo's now saying, actually, Apple decided to postpone the lower end model to focus on the second generation of the current Apple Vision Pro. So
okay,
I guess he reads what Mark Gurman writes.
I have to defend Ming Chi Kuo on this.
I'm glad I'm sitting down
because I don't have any insider knowledge on this.
Neither does he.
But I find it not at all hard to accept or believe that Apple has shifted its plans for this device. And I don't have any problem believing that Apple was like, well, you know what, the next one should be the cheaper lower end model. And, you know, that's what we should do next. And then for some reason deciding that, no, let's go ahead and we need to boost our high end model and then, you know, and get that right before we release another lower one.
Maybe. However, when you take into consideration the amount of time that goes into the product development, the likelihood that Apple was ready to stop the development of the lower end model to start development of the second gen Vision Pro at this point.
They've been doing both of them. They've been working on both. What are you talking about?
All right. So if they've been working on both, okay, sure. I could see them pausing one of the projects.
Yeah, or de-emphasizing the one project and re-emphasizing the other one. But, you know, they're not.
As long as they weren't being developed exclusively one or the other, sure. Okay, now I'm with you. Okay.
Okay, all right. I accept your apology. And I'm on behalf of Tim Cook, he accepts your apology too.
That's so weird because he just sent me a text message saying he does not, in fact, accept my apology.
I like that. Right. So I was actually afraid. This is what I was trying to say. I was actually afraid that Apple had that this next cheaper version of the Apple Vision product line was going to be still the Apple Vision Pro.
Ah.
Right. And that was like, I was feeling like, well, I don't know, man, that it doesn't seem like they should be cutting back on features on this thing. So regardless, it's good that there's probably eventually going to be an Apple Vision alongside the Apple Vision Pro.
I think that's a very safe bet. Yeah. I mean, it fits with the way Apple has rolled out other products in the past.
Right.
Start at the high end, and then over time, you work down your price point structure.
Right. And then eventually release the Apple Vision Air.
Right.
And then people
right after the Apple Vision SE.
Yeah. So there's that, and then there's the I'm wondering if the next Mac Studio is going to be an M4 Ultra, or if they will wait and do the M5 Ultra, because they didn't do an M3 Mac Studio.
No, they didn't. And so I'm really interested in seeing what we get and when we get the next Studio. Because that's a super cool computer.
It is a great computer. And I have loved mine. I've got the first generation. So it's an M1 Ultra.
Mm-hmm.
In that I want to play. I'm I am sure that my computer will probably handle Civilization 7. But
yeah, but are you that sure?
Yeah, I mean, because the problem with Civilization on a Mac is that it's not made for the Mac. So It's definitely what am I trying to say? It can be a resource hog on the Mac. Civilization 6 can. And I'm sure that Civilization 7 will too. So I'm kind of thinking about maybe getting a new Mac. If I can afford it. If it's gonna be an M4 Ultra or above.
Yeah. Okay.
I certainly wouldn't upgrade my M1 to an M2, which is what the current Ultras are.
I'm with you. I don't see where you would have the value out of that, especially this far into the product life cycle.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%.
Yeah. I think you're better off waiting until the next refresh happens.
Because, you know, Civilization 7 is coming out.
Right. Yeah. Yep. All right. Here's a crazy thing.
Yeah.
If I were to buy a Mac today and I didn't need a laptop, mm-hmm. I would get a Mac Mini.
Yeah, that's fair.
The new M4 Pro Mac Mini.
Yeah.
Holy crap. I could do everything that I want with that. And that's a crazy powerful computer.
It is.
I wouldn't be able to justify, at least for me, getting a Mac Studio today with the current M4 Pro Mac Mini available.
That's fair. That's fair. I mean, and to be fairer though, I couldn't justify the M1 Studio that I got. I got it because I got it because I could, not because I needed it.
Yeah, well, that Civilization game isn't going to play itself.
That's
without
true.
The right computer.
That is true. See, the problem with me and Civilization is I like to play huge worlds, mm-hmm. and on a very slow. Have you played Civilization?
I'm looking around to see if you realize it's actually me you're talking to.
Yeah. So you can play it. There are difficulty levels, there are world sizes, and there are time scales. So, like, if you're playing on a very fast game, hundreds of years will go by between turns.
Okay.
And if you're playing on a slow scale, it'll be a much shorter period of time that goes by between turns. And so I like to play a slow game in a huge world. And that tends to start crawling even on my M1 Ultra with 128 gigs of RAM.
Holy crap.
It starts crawling at late stage after I've won the game, but have continued to play because I need to see if I can conquer the entire world.
As one does.
So it tends to get pretty slow. So
wow.
Yeah.
That's horrible that a computer with that much horsepower is being just basically kicked in the shins by a game like that.
Yeah, these are definitely first world problems. These are privileged first world problems. For sure. So, yeah, there's that.
Yeah. Okay. They need to address performance.
Well, yeah. But again, you know, these games, I'm glad that we've got that game on the Mac. It's being ported in some way. And that's probably the biggest performance problem, is the fact that it's being brought to the Mac instead of developed on the Mac.
Well, so version 7, that's the one that's coming up next. version 6, I presume, was released before Apple's whole game port thing was introduced.
That's probably the case. It's very old.
Oh, okay. That definitely. So maybe they're using game port to give a more optimized version to Mac users when version 7 comes out.
I hope so.
That would be cool.
I feel like Apple's hardware has a lot of oomph these days, and I feel like more games should be coming over. And, you know, it's Apple's continued lack of interest in the game market is telling there. But anyway, whatever. Civilization 7's coming, so that's enough for me.
So check it out. We managed to do a whole show where all we do is complain about our personal tech issues.
Yay!
Oh, us.
Yeah, that seems really fitting. In fact, I'm going to do this. And that's this week's Brian and Jeff Whine About Things. If you have anything to comment on that or question, you can write us at contextmachinepodcast@gmail.com. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly. The bass is by Dr. Boom, recorded for this show. And that's all for this week, Jeff.
Hey, and thank you, LinkedIn Jobs, for being our sponsor.
Yes, thank you very much, LinkedIn. We appreciate it. Everyone, have a great day.
And we already have something to complain about next time.
Excellent.